welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Today's episode, we're veering just a little bit off of the food scene this week. Not that we don't love it. I'm here with co-host Burl Love, and today we will be welcoming native Cincinnatian, and let's face it, West Sider, Bill Hemmer, who is on Fox News Channel. He co-hosts the show from 9 to 11 in the morning. I'm looking forward to talking to him about all things West Side. Oh, and Cincinnati, sorry.
He's a very proud West Sider, too. I'm looking forward to talking to Bill. Maybe get his insights on how things are shaping up politically. I think that would be fun. But I thought we could talk about politics to kick this podcast off, just so people don't think it's a food podcast, because you're right, we have been talking a lot about food lately, but now we have to get back to serious matters.
And absolutely.
So let's start with the poll that the Cincinnati Enquirer and its sister newspapers in the USA Today Network, Ohio, worked with, along with Suffolk University. They've done some polls for our national flagship, USA Today, and because they're so interested in what's happening in Ohio and how that might shape the national election, we were able to do a couple of different polls. One of them was a little bit of a surprise to me, and that's that Mike DeWine has a double-digit lead over Nan Whaley in the governor's race. What do you think about that?
That is not a surprise. You know, Nan Whaley, the Democrats, I just feel like they just haven't really done the rallying needed and the making the case and raising the money. It just has not been kind of the race you would expect in this election. Mike DeWine, he's just a juggernaut, and to really take that on was going to take a lot. And I have not really seen the kind of election that I thought it was going to be out of the Nan Whaley camp. And that is, I'm not commenting on whether I think she's a good candidate or not, but not the television advertising that I thought that I would see. And it just,
yeah, the in the Suffolk poll, it was 54 to 39. And so that, I'm not surprised he was leading, because he's leading most polls, but that's a pretty big lead. And it's looking like, because he's in such a good position, he might not even debate her, which is going to be an issue, I think, for us. We're part of the Enquirer's part of the Ohio Debate Commission, which is a group of media organizations and civic organizations that are trying to bring debate back to what I would say a valuable resource for voters, because over the years, candidates have either tried to dodge debates or handpick debate formats and forums that line up with them politically, as opposed to a neutral debate. So I would hate not to see at least one debate in the race for governor, because I think people need that. I think people need to see the candidates unscripted, answering questions, following up with each other on questions. I mean, debates go back, you know, centuries in our country. And so for DeWine to sit on this lead and not engage Nan Whaley, I think would be a disservice to voters. But let's move on.
Wait. If I was Mike DeWine, I would not debate either. If I was politician.
But what is he afraid of? What is he afraid of?
I don't think he's afraid. I just think he doesn't think he needs to do it. As a citizen, of course, I think that both that we do need to do this just so people can hear from both sides. But if you're trying to win something, you take every advantage that you can get. And I see why he's saying no.
I see that too. But I think it's unfortunate. So let's move on.
Okay.
Because where I want to get at is you obviously follow closely Cincinnati City Council, local politics. And even though you probably won't be covering the race in the first congressional district between Steve Shabbat, the incumbent, and Greg Landsman, the challenger, Greg is a Cincinnati City Council person, and so you know a lot about Greg. But here's the number I'm going to throw out at you now, and that is, in the same poll, The pollsters asked a question on Ohio's abortion laws, and I'll read the question specifically just so we're accurate here. Ohio lawmakers are considering a ban on abortion after cardiac activity is detected. We call that the heartbeat bill here, usually around 6 weeks. There would be an exception for the life of the mother and no exception for race and incest. Do you support or oppose this ban? And based on the poll of 500 likely Ohio voters in the election, there were only 26, I'm rounding up, who supported the ban, and 67.8% opposed the ban, which tells me that, at least according to those polled, Ohio might be a little left of where the legislature is on the issue of abortion. Do you think that will give Greg Landsman a little bit of a window does that give him a little bit of a strategic advantage running against Steve Chabot?
I do, and it's a surprise, you know, when people were kind of looking at this 2 years ago and everything that was happening in this district, people would have said, no, this is for Steve Chabot. But with what's going on with abortion, it does help the Democrat in the race. And then, of course, the main thing is who's actually casting the votes. The district has changed since the last time and has much more of Hamilton County in it, less of Green Township. It is, you know, it still has that Warren County juggernaut that Steve Chabot is, you know, counting on to take him over, right over the edge there. But this race, I think, is a lot closer than anybody predicted. And it is because of that issue and whether suburban women, but then they do have to come out and vote and how this district is built. And I think that we do know that Hamilton County women are going to come out for this issue and vote. And there's more of those people in this district.
So aside from that issue, where do you think Landsman is making his most, trying to pull himself, distinguish himself from Chabot? Because we see that the commercials have already started.
I'm aware.
Chabot is hitting Landsman very hard on his stance on funding for the police. And I think that for a certain type of voter, that's very effective. Where is Landsman likely to make his, I don't want to say attack, but the counterattack? Where is he distinguishing himself
most? I actually don't know where he's planning on doing that. And we haven't really seen him, but he's kind of like, this has been used over and over in this race. The idea that Steve Chabot doesn't do enough is kind of the theme there, and that somebody new coming in, a Democrat, would do more. But I think I'm actually shocked that that is the main issue. I thought for sure that this was going to be Gang of Five Palooza out of the Chabot camp, and that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing this defund the police. I have to say those ads are clearly resonating just because average people that I know, like neighbors, people I see out, are asking me if Greg defunded the police. And in my opinion, I hate to offer here, but I will anyway, I don't think that he did defund the police. The underpinning of that, and even it says in the ads with why Steve Chabot is saying that, is Greg Landsman, out of the $35 million, you know, police budget, which is the largest budget in the whole city budget, took $200,000. Don't ask me to do the math, you guys. You know, but that's a drop in the bucket, and gave it to the Cincinnati Citizens Complaint Authority for oversight of the police department, which was radically underfunded at that point and really not functioning how it needed to be. And it's part of our collaborative agreement. So is that taking $200,000 away from the police? I mean, they're supposed to make recommendations about better policing and ideally make policing better so it costs less on the whole. So it's a very nuanced issue, but, you know, sound bites in the election, right?
That's
defund
right.
The police.
Well,
is not like I walked in there. This whole council as a whole made this vote and they didn't say we're defunding the police. They felt they were doing it in theory to bolster the collaborative agreement, which people, you know, that's a historic part of Cincinnati
You're right.
policing.
You're right.
So that is where that you know, that hit is coming from. But clearly,
well, that's one of the many issues I think that we'll have the opportunity to fact check as the rhetoric heats up. I will say, though,
that debate is going to be, I can't wait.
Yeah, there's at least two debates scheduled, I know. So we have to go back to Chabot's ability to win, even when others say that this is the election he's going to be challenged in. Just recently, when he ran against Aftab Perval, everybody said, you know, he's the up-and-comer. He's going to be the one. Chabot, once we got to Election Day, had no problem defeating Aftab. Same with Kate Schroeder. Why, you know, if you're going to make the safe bet, you would probably bet that this district is not ready to vote for a Democrat.
It's a new district, though.
It's making it almost
impossible. This year, there's so many varying factors that we've never come across before. And also, you know, polling.
I don't trust the polls. Even though I just quoted our poll. Don't trust the poll. Yeah, it's very hard.
It's hard. Polling companies are adjusting, but I mean, I don't get any polls. I have a cell phone only. The Coolidges haven't had an actual phone in 14 years. Jack Coolidge has never had a home phone in our house when he has been alive. And so I just feel like
But you know, the pollsters now have cell phone datas, right? Databases. They'll find you eventually.
Okay.
They will totally find you.
They have found the different campaigns for, honestly, both sides, Democrats and Republicans, have somehow found me to ask me for money by text. I'm like, this is the wrong, barking up the wrong tree. There's no giving.
Well, this is going to be one of the big races in the state for sure, right here in our district. So we'll be talking more about it. I thought it would be fun just to, you know, in light of the polls that just came out, to get your thoughts on how this first congressional race is shaping up. So more to come on that.
It's like the old days of the podcast. I love it.
That's right. Well, maybe Bo Hemmer can weigh in on that too.
Definitely. Welcome to special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. I'm so excited to talk to Bill Hemmer today. He's literally straight off of, you know, some of the biggest news of the year, which is Queen Elizabeth dying, and her funeral was today. So we kind of want to hear, like, well, let's start out with, you know, what is that like in a national newsroom?
Wow. Hey, great to be with you. Thank you for your time. I know we had this scheduled for some time previously, and I just want your listeners to know that you guys were massively flexible with the schedule, because we weren't quite sure when things were going to wrap. So thank you for that. And I wanted to recognize you both for that.
My whole life is breaking news. I understand.
You know, can I tell you, I mean, this may not be the best thing. So when I'm in my office here in New York, we pay attention to Fox News, and we pay attention to CNN, we pay attention to MSNBC, and we pay attention to at least one business channel, at least I do. And the business channel of record for me is Fox Business. But behind me on my wall, I have a larger TV screen, and I've had the BBC on for almost 2 weeks, and it's been a very interesting and captivating experience just to see how they cover it. And when you think about how the royal family is tied into the BBC and vice versa, you know, they pretty much get the information, I believe, before a lot of others, as it relates to the royal family. And to see the way they've covered this, they've done it with class and with taste. And I'm very proud of my colleagues who worked so many hours to get us through the past 10 or 12 days. It's a moment in history. I think, Sherry, when you start to get away from the moment that is right now, you start to absorb it in a greater historical context is how I would characterize it.
It was. I mean, I was thinking about it because I was flipping around this morning the different channels to see how everyone was covering it. And I was thinking, it's amazing to think that everyone in the world was watching this. Like, this was a worldwide, like, there's so few things that are that, even when things happen nationally, like our whole nation tunes in. But this was the whole world was taking an interest in what was happening.
Sherry, just to contribute to that, this is just anecdotal, but we get a lot of emails every day, all day. And during the coverage of her service today, there was very little email traffic. So I, on your point, I agree with you. 70 years, I think it's pretty safe to say between the three of us that we will never see a monarch in our lifetimes rule the way she did with that longevity.
Have you practiced saying King Charles? Is that rolling off the tongue yet?
I screwed it up a couple times. I called him the Prince Barrel. I thought a couple things about Charles, growing up as the Prince of Wales. When he was in Cardiff, Wales at the end of last week, I thought, he's mixing up with the crowd and he spent a lot of time talking to people, which is not his style. We in America, we're used to our quote-unquote politicians mixing up with people. We expect that from them. The royal family kind of does what they want, let's be honest. But when he was in Cardiff, Wales, that's when I thought he was the most comfortable throughout the entire past 12 days or so. He's the king. And I also think the other thing we can say right now, Beryl, is that William will be a king in all likelihood while we are still alive. The forecast is 20 years.
We always look at Google search trends, and I think how old is King Charles or how old is Charles was one of the most searched items over the past few days nationally.
I can tell you this because he's 73. He was born on my birthday.
Well, 50 years apart.
Right? Yeah, November 14th. I always claimed Boutros Ghali, and Condoleezza Rice and Prince Charles on November 14th.
Famous birthdays. Yeah. That's good. I share a birthday with Richard Nixon. I don't know what that means, but anyway. So, Bill, for those unfamiliar with the Bill Hemmer story, I think we have to just kind of like fill in a little background here before we jump into, I think we want to talk about your take on what's, politics in Ohio and all of those things. But just to get the bio out of the way, you went to Elder High School.
First he went to Our Lady of Victory, right?
Oh, let's go farther
from
back
the west
than
side.
That. Sure did.
Big Catholic family. You're one of five. You got you're in the middle, right? Middle child-ish?
Yes. Okay. I'm a middle child. I'm afflicted with all the conditions of a middle child.
I see. Went to Miami, and sorry about the UC game this weekend, but that, the bell will ring in Cincinnati for another year. But you started out working in local television here, and I believe you were doing sports for WCPO?
Yes, that's correct.
So you were under the tutelage of Denny Jansen?
Yes, and John Popovich. Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
I see why you went far now. See, it's all becoming crystal clear now.
So when did you realize that you were destined for a career in television?
It's such an insecure business. And so many factors outside of yourself can determine whether you are successful or not in it. Hard for me to say. I think I went to Miami University thinking I'd be a disc jockey or a sports reporter. And I got close to a colleague of mine who worked at WLWT, and he said, we need help, with the interns down there, especially on the weekends, I said, okay, well, I love to do that. And so I would go down from Oxford in my buddy's Honda Accord that I borrowed and sit there in an edit bay and log down every play in a Cincinnati Reds game or a Cincinnati Bengals game, which at the time, you're 19 years old, you do what you can. I wasn't really sure it was going to work out. I got into my early 20s, and I've been 19, but I was about 5 years in, and I was a producer, but I couldn't get on the air, and I really wanted to be a reporter. That was my ambition, and I had some lucky circumstances occur at WCPO, and you're 24, and you're living in that town, and you get the job. And I tell you what was awesome about that is that I, at 24 years old, I got to go into the Cincinnati Reds locker room. That's back when Pete Rose is the manager. Amazing stories and times back then, and also flying a jet with the Bengals to their games in away stadiums. It was just an absolute thrill for me. The downside of it is that you're pretty much a virgin when it comes to TV, and so when you made your mistakes, You made them in front of your family and friends. And I will say to this day, they were most accommodating not to give me a hard time when I was learning, let's say.
Well, tell us a little bit about the jump then to being a national television personality. How does that happen?
Long answer. I'll make it as brief as I can. I had my midlife crisis at age 26. I had gone to college in Luxembourg as a student at Miami, and my grand ambition was to backpack around the world before I turned the age of 30. And if I did not accomplish that, my life was going to come crumbling down all around me. Imagine that.
I know what you're going to talk about now.
But I had $15,000. Sorry, what's that?
I think I know what you're going to talk about. Are you going to talk about Bill's Excellent Adventure?
Yes, that's what it became. Yeah, and it was a trip where I took the job and said, thank you, but I got to do this. And I got 15 grand in the bank, and I'm just going to go for it. And I had a great boss at the time, Jim Sargent, who loved the idea. He's a former hippie himself. He loves Bob Dylan. I love Bob Dylan. We talked about it. He said, maybe we can do something with you while you're away, and you can come back and work for us when you come home. And I said, I'll only do that if I'm allowed to work in news and not sports. That's the next step that I felt that was necessary for me. And so I backpacked around the world for a year, came home, and worked the news side at Channel 9, and I was trying to get to the anchor desk, and there were a lot of really good guys in front of me that I was not going to pass up. And so I hired an agent, Jackie Harris, and she got me an audition in Atlanta at CNN, and flew down there and got the job. And the reason I got the job, I am absolutely convinced of, is because my boss said, write on the back of this resume here and tell me all the countries you've been to. Because I know you're 30 years old, but you look 18. And if I'm going to sell you to my boss, I have to sell him on what you've done in your life. And I got to 35 or 45 or 55 countries. And he said, that's enough.
And that's pretty amazing.
So it worked
out.
That
is amazing. Tell us a little bit about when you went on that trip, you said you midlife crisis at 26. I had to laugh because I did the same thing. And I'll tell you why. I was reading an article about Neil Young in Rolling Stone, and it talked about how, at 26 years old, he recorded Harvest. And by that point, he had already been in the Buffalo Springfield and all these things. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm 26 years old. I haven't done anything. You know, you have this kind of like moment of early midlife crisis. Did you find what you were looking for backpacking through Europe?
One slight correction. This wasn't Europe. It was mostly third world.
Okay.
It was what we would later consider emerging markets or even American competitors today. It's like 25 years ago now, right? This is 92, 93. So coming up on 30 years, actually. So this was China, and it was Vietnam, and it was Southeast Asia, and it was Nepal and India. It was Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Russia. And my quest was just to learn something new every day. And to really... I watched a lot of Discovery Channel. I watched a lot of History Channel. I read a lot of books and tried to figure out what came of interest to me. And it wasn't a direct line west to east, but it was pretty close. And I tell you what happens when you get out there is that you learn so much about other things that you were never exposed to before. And you talk to other people who have been there, and maybe they're doing something similar like you. And they say, oh, when you get there, you got to check this out. And the list continues to grow and grow. Here's what I think now at age 57. There is not a day where I am doing my job, including the coverage of the Royals today, where some measure of knowledge that I learned out there from that around the world trip is not incorporated into my understanding of the story on any particular day. It's true for the Middle East, which is a massively complicated topic. It's true for issues in Pakistan or India. It's true for issues in Southeast Asia, China, especially now, and into Vietnam. So I said at the time, I said, guys, it's not going to be a, it's kind of cheesy here, but I'll tell you, this is not a vacation, it's an education. And that's the way I approached it. And well, I learned a ton that I can still say to this day was of enormous value for me and my understanding of the world.
Do you still travel a lot and have that kind of craving to learn in person about other cultures?
The answer is yes. But I got a house out on Long Island, and I really like to go there on the weekends and just chill out. So I consider myself fortunate to have that outlet. In terms of curiosity, when I talk to a lot of high school kids and college students and even young people who are working here, maybe they're 23, 24, 25 years of age. And one of the things I try to impress upon them is some of the things that I've learned. And one of the things that I've learned about curiosity is that if you are going to pursue a job, a career, a profession, you're going to be doing that for a long time. And the best way to ensure that you either succeed at that job or know that that's the career that you want to pursue is whether or not your mind is stimulated through the work. And if it is, what you'll find is that you can do that job for a very long time.
I 100% agree with that. Like, I learn something new every day. Mm-hmm. And I value that about my job.
So we were hoping to get your take on your expert take from your position in America's newsroom as you look at the state of Ohio heading into the election. Your take on a few of the stories coming out of Ohio, maybe starting with Vance versus Ryan. We just did a poll with Suffolk University and the Columbus Dispatch and some of our sister publications in Ohio that show them pretty much statistically tied.
Yeah. I believe that. What would my best educated answer on that? I work the board on election nights, so it's my job to learn the districts, to learn the counties. And never has there been a more complicated year because of the census of 2020 and how redistricting was carried out in various states that are still battleground areas and congressional districts. It's taken a lot of time to learn it. And we got a great staff. And I wouldn't say confused is the answer, but sometimes you're like, well, how could this district favor Republicans by X amount of points when just last cycle a Democrat won? And it's because they've taken the lines, and if you've got a Democratic legislature, you've drawn on a way to help you, likewise for the Republicans. So at the congressional level, I think there'd be some very interesting races, three or four directly. But on the Senate side, I think at the moment, J.D. Vance, in all likelihood, is in the driver's seat. And I say that only because you had a big rally with Trump there over the weekend. Trump won the state 2 times, 8 points both times, I believe, if my memory's correct. And that tells me that a good Republican candidate would be able to win that state again. I also believe the governor is in a good position to be reelected, and you could help drive turnout if you're a Republican governor to help the Republican candidate. I can see that scenario happening. In what is a tight race and J.D. Vance winning it by a few points, I can see that scenario. Likewise, I've known Ryan for a long time, and I know he's a good candidate, and he's a real estate candidate. And I know Republicans will say that he goes with Biden 100% of the time, but I think he knows the state well. And I think he's going to be a real challenge over the next 50 some odd days. I also think that his old district up there on Akron Canton, Congressional District 13, is one of those races that we've put on our races to watch column. And Ryan was popular in that part of Ohio, and it's going to be a good race between the Republican and Democrat in northeastern Ohio for his seat. But as for predictions on who pulls out that center base, I don't know. I don't know if we know how good of a candidate J.D. Vance is just yet, so he'll be able to tell us that through his campaigning and hopefully when we get to some debates coming up.
Do you think that Ryan is going to be able to play the, you know, even though I'm a Democrat, I'm an Ohioan first, I'm, you know, from a blue-collar community, I share your values. J.D. Vance is, you know, Hollywood come home, fake hillbilly. Is there anything there, or is this perhaps, I don't know, just something we're going to forget about and people are going to really vote along the party lines?
Yeah, my sense is he'll make the argument that you just stated. The problem for Democrats is that Republicans have had that state wired now for 6 years, and they really know where the votes are. And I could see Trump going back there again, maybe in the final 2 weeks of the campaign. He can make a difference. We have seen that in the primary season thus far. But it's one to watch. I agree with your poll. I think at the moment, based on what we think we know about the race, it is too close to call. But I'd be anxious to see a debate between those two men.
So, me too. You run the board on election night, right? Like the electronic board where it's going to show all the things coming in and everything, right? That's one of your skill sets.
That is correct. Yeah.
Who thought that that would be a skill set that, you know, journalists would need? But it's true. Are you already practicing?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Are you already practicing for election night and like how it all works and everything?
Here, yes, we're practicing on paper, Sherry. But the software is still being coded. And we've seen a little bit of it, but we haven't been able to unveil it entirely. But it's mid-September. It'll be ready. It's amazing what we can do with this. When you've got this much data coming in from so many different parts of the country at one given time, you have to figure out a way to tell the story. And this is the way we think we can do it. I think it'll be an exciting night. I'm not so sure as of today. And again, we're talking on September 19th. So I reserve the right to change my mind on this in a week or a month. But I don't think we may not know the outcome in the U.S. Senate on election night. I could see that as a possible scenario.
I think you're right there. And back to the technology, which is amazing. I mean, you guys have proven that all you really need is a whiteboard to tell the story, thanks to the late Tim Russert. But do you think that that the let me phrase it this way. The confidence in the elections will be restored somewhat, or do you think the delay that you just forecasted is going to feed into more people challenging the results, people questioning voter integrity? How do you think that is going to be for this election coming out of the last one?
I think it's a great question. I think it's a fair question. I don't have a good answer for you. I think we'll probably find out together. When you have close elections in America, that's where you start to see the issues with voting, no matter which side you're on. If you've got a blowout, we don't think about it, right? You know, we make a call early in the night, you move on. But in some of these close elections, I would consider, I don't know who it will be or where it will come from, but there will be some doubt. I'm hesitant to say from where or from whom because we haven't seen results yet.
Do you think that it is possible to restore like faith in it? Because our local board of elections, I give them a lot of credit for this, is like mm-hmm. doing like behind the scene tours and really trying to give people, we've not had problems in our particular area, but they're, you know, they understand the culture that's out there and they're trying to give people that faith and like get ahead of it and be like, it's so secure. This is how we do things and paying attention to that narrative. Do you think there's anything is it so political that people don't pay attention to those little details?
I interrupted you.
Sorry.
I give them a lot of credit for the work they're trying to do. I just don't think some people will ever be convinced. That's how I come down on it. If you have blowout elections, it's not an issue. But when a country is 50-50, when a country is evenly divided, as I still believe it is today, you're going to find the warts and you're going to exploit them. But eventually, you've got to get a winner, and we'll see what we get, you know, on the 8th, and maybe it's the 9th, and maybe it's the 10th or the 11th of November. Some of these states are really close on the Senate side, and it could go on for several days.
So let me ask you a tough question now, and it's one we ask ourselves. What do you think the role of the media, particularly national media, is to deal with the polarization and help, you know, counteract what you said, those who are trying to exploit that divisiveness? What's our role?
My feeling is we stick to the facts. When I think about cable news these days, I do believe there's a level of polarization. For me personally, I have always felt most comfortable in a news slot. I personally don't walk in here every day with 100 new ideas on how to change government. It's not what I'm made of. If you were to ask me to do an opinion show, I would fail miserably. And the way I see my job is to present what we know at that time. And hopefully over time, people come to trust us for that information. As far as softening the edges of polarization in America, I think it's there. And I don't have a great solution for you, nor could I offer one now. Other than to say, if you trust us with what we do from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern time, then keep on coming back.
I do think each of the journalists is responsible for, like, their own I think people do understand that. And, like, who do we trust and who do we want to listen to it's subjective for the person. But I see that and, like, keep coming back if you trust what I'm doing in the moment.
You know, Sherry, what I would say about that is, you know, we're on the live wire out there in breaking news stories, and you don't want to get it wrong. Because if you're forced to pull something back, people remember. And it's great to be fast, especially in this high-tech world and, you know, where everything's live. It's great to be fast. But it's better. It's better to be correct.
Agree.
And not in a situation where you have to go back on the air. That makes for a really bad day. And over time, hopefully, that is eliminated, and people come to us because they trust us. And I know my co-anchor, Dana Perino, so well. And I trust her so much. And she is so steeped in knowledge and has great intellect and has a great sense of how things are playing. And when you're on the air as a co-anchor every day, that's really important. As I tell people, you can't see me right now, but if you were sitting across from me, I would say nothing is going to work here. If this doesn't work between you and me, none of this is going to work out here, is the way I would phrase it.
That's how I feel about Burl.
It really is. The foundation of our relationship will determine whether or not we are successful as a news program.
So you've been, when you talk about success, with the changes in cable news just in the time you've been there, you've suddenly became one of the survivors. You just with the last reorganization on your network, you are still in the anchor chair. Did you expect such a long run at Fox?
You know, it's going to be 27 and a half. It'll be 30 years coming up in 2025. Yeah, 30 years of national cable. That's a long time. Don't know many who have been able to pull it off.
What do you credit that to? What do you credit that to?
I had 10 great years at CNN. It was really an amazing time to cover history that was.
And for those who don't remember, you were actually in Afghanistan after 9/11 reporting from Kandahar, if I remember right?
Yes, yes, that's right. You know, when you see history change before the lives of millions of people in front of you, it's really what was driving me to get into the business and pursue the job at CNN and then here at Fox. It's been 16 years, 17 years at Fox, if my math is correct. This place is an awesome operation. My colleagues are so talented and so smart and so fast. And if you want to survive in cable news these days, you need to be nimble. And we're made that way, to be nimble and flexible, to react to any event at any hour of any day. It's made for an extremely successful company.
So, all right. But do they ever let you come home and visit? Are your parents still here?
You mean Cincinnati?
Yes.
You know what stinks about talking to you guys today is that it's a Monday, and so much of my mood on Mondays is determined by what happens in the Bengal game.
We were just talking about it amongst ourselves.
So just like London is in mourning at the beginning of this conversation, I don't know if Cincinnati is in mourning, but
we're trying to convince ourselves not
to think about it yet.
We're trying to convince ourselves not to panic.
I follow the team closely, and to answer your question, I get home several times a year. I've got a big family. Mom and Dad are living on the west side out in Bridgetown, and my brother in Northern Kentucky, sister in Westchester, sister in Western Hills, another sister up in Cleveland, Ohio. So we're up to what? I think I'm a great uncle five times now, so that's a pretty good record.
Are there must-dos when you come home, things you want to make sure you do when you're here?
Yes, hang with Mom and Dad. I think they're very special people. And at age 83, we still have a great time together. And so I consider that very, that is precious time. So that's A. B, mount out of the bar and grill. And see if I can buzz around and see some friends from college or high school. I'll try and do that as well.
Do you stick to West Side establishments, or you come downtown?
No, I'm ecumenical.
That's a good way to put it.
So, yeah, just about everywhere, even Northern Kentucky, East Side, West Side. Depending on where I'm staying, if I'm staying at Mom and Dad's for a day or two, it'll be on the West Side. But some of my favorite haunts, definitely the Bar and Grill, and has been for a long time with Eddie Shepard and what he's doing there.
Did you get to go to the Super Bowl?
You know, I had a hell of a run last year. I love football, and I love the Bengals first. And I came home for the Raiders game, and I'm with my buddy Danny Jansen. We had great seats. And Jermaine Pratt picked that ball off on the one-yard line, and 66,000 people were standing the entire game. Everyone over the age of 35 was, oh my gosh, you didn't screw me this time. And everyone under the age of 35 was losing their minds. So that was a great moment. Went down to Tennessee for the Titans game. And to get that interception toward the end and see McPherson kick that field goal with time running out, that was quite a moment. You had 15,000 Bengal fans who were in Nashville for that game.
I was there.
The fans all disappeared. The Bengal fans walk over the pedestrian bridge into downtown Nashville and had a grand old party. The following weekend, we went out to Kansas City. Had 9 family members and a buddy of mine flew in from Boise, Idaho, who's a Chiefs fan. We had great seats, and we saw that win in overtime. And went downtown, tried to find something was open. There were 2 places open, and inside were Joe Burrow's mom and dad. And so we had a good old time with them. Still in touch with his dad to this day, and I call him Coach. Jimmy from his time at OU. And then for the Super Bowl, we had about 15 people make it. And that was an expensive month. I will tell you that you got to win the damn game. And if you don't, it's going to sting for a long time because Super Bowls are rare and you never know when you'll have the opportunity again.
This year, you'll have the opportunity again this year. We're staying positive.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. There's time, but that offensive line, they're still building their relationship with each other. You know, not playing a game. You've got 5 out of 11 starters who had never played a game together until the Steeler game last week. And the communication breakdowns were pretty obvious in Dallas. There was plenty of time to get that worked out. I thought what Burrow said after the game yesterday about changing the way we play because teams are playing a soft zone, they figured us out. They will figure that out. And they will have a competitive season. But that doesn't take away the sting from a Monday morning.
See, this is a true Bengals fan. About plays, all of the games. That is very impressive. All right, we're going to let you get back to your actual job.
I'd rather talk about the Bengals, but yeah. Hey, it's been great to be with the two of you. Thank you so much for your time. We'll see what happens in November. And when we get closer to 2024, we'll do this again.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Good.
We'll be watching on election night.
Thanks, guys. And thanks for being flexible again today. Have a great day.
Absolutely loved talking to him today, journalist to journalist, you know, and of course, you know, he is helping cover as he can the Queen's funeral.
It's a busy day for him.
It is. And I just got to, I only had to watch it on TV today. Burrell, you should have sent me. I could have been like the Inquirer correspondent.
You know, I'm one of those people who don't get excited about the royal family.
I'm excited for both of us.
I know this is history. I did watch a little bit of the funeral this morning, or at least the procession. And I have a lot of respect, of course, for, you know, the Queen. But day in and day out, you know, how people get so excited and everything going on between Harry and William and all of that stuff. I don't care. I couldn't care less.
All right. Fair enough. It's hard to argue. Like, it doesn't affect our everyday life.
Right. But I know I'm in the minority on that, so I hope not to get a lot of hate mail for that. So what'd you do this weekend?
I don't think I had any choice. I work at the Inquirer. I had to go to Oktoberfest. It was right outside the window.
Right outside our door, yeah. So I had what I would call a very Cincinnati day on Saturday because I went to the Bearcat game at Paycor Stadium. Some call it the Miami game because it was home for Miami. But UC Miami is always great. It was UC family weekend. I have a niece attending. So my sister was like, hey, we're going to tailgate. We should have carpooled, but that's another story. So I started out tailgating and Oktoberfest was setting up. And then we went to the game. And then, of course, we had to go to Oktoberfest after the game. And I think I was drinking a shameless plug here for Rheingeist, a Franz, which is their official Oktoberfest beer. I think I had my first Franz at like 10:30 to wash down my Geta slider for breakfast. You can't get any more Cincinnati than that.
I agree, at 10:30 in the morning.
I know.
Definitely.
We had to pace ourselves.
Definitely. I will say, I don't know if anybody saw this, Keith Pandolfi posted on social media, can't we just enjoy our races? Because it was the Hudepohl race this weekend to go hand in hand with Oktoberfest. And he's like, can't we just eat, you know, drink and be merry?
Right.
We have to run.
Why do we have to have a race, you know, tied to Oktoberfest? Can't we just eat, drink, and be merry?
It is an excuse to drink or start drinking early in the morning. See, it's brilliant, honestly.
I'm with you because, I mean, I didn't get a chance to do that here, but a lot of years on Thanksgiving, if we're in town, I will do the Thanksgiving Day race just as a, you know, a license to eat anything I want to afterwards, you know, enjoy
That's
Thanksgiving.
That's what everyone does.
Eat like a pig all day because, hey, I ran 6 miles today. So yeah, I get it. I think it's good. But I didn't have time to squeeze that in as well. And you and I were comparing notes. Even though it was great to be in that giant crowd after the game at Oktoberfest, that's probably strategically not the best time to go if you don't like lines, because we did have to sort of like wade through the lines and wait a long time. But I think it was worthwhile. I have to get my fix in.
I always go on the first day. I have a very regimented schedule of doing this. And things around it have changed over the years, where it is and how, you know, what days it is. Was it Thursday? But I stuck true to what I like to do. I didn't get to go to the running of the wiener dogs. I was on deadline. And so I did not go down during the day. I might have done that just for fun. But I met my friends at, you know, 4 o'clock, and it had already thinned out from the whole, you know, daytime crowd. I was able to really enjoy the different bands playing, kind of walk around, see everything before it really started getting crowded. And then I was home in bed by 9.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a long day.
It was a long day. So what is your go-to food item when you're at Oktoberfest?
Well, I'm Italian, girl. I don't know if you know this. But I do always have a brat on a pretzel bun with sauerkraut.
Oh, that's good.
And
strong choice.
Took a cream puff home to share with Jack.
Okay, so we talked about this, or you guys talked about it, maybe 2 years ago when Tickle Pickle started debuting their crazy mac and cheese. So I had to go back, and I'm so glad they had it again this year. Their Greta Van Fleet, which is a riff on the band Greta Van Fleet. But it is mac and cheese topped with Greta and crunched up barbecue Grippo's potato chips. So I know that's not authentic German.
I know. Was it good? As good as it was the first time you had it?
It was really, really good.
I mean, Grippo's.
And the other thing, I couldn't get one this year just because there's only so much room in my stomach. And the lines were really long at the booth that has this. And I wish I could remember the name of the booth. But there's something you can get at Oktoberfest, which is really, really German and really, really an acquired taste. And I have acquired that taste. And it is the Limburger onion and mustard sandwich on rye bread.
I saw that and I thought, who eats that? Now I know.
I eat that.
Now
I didn't this year and I regret it. I kind of like I'm having, you know, buyer's envy with what my food is. Just too many good food choices.
There was a lot of
food and you know, choices. You can get Limburger cheese in most Kroger stores and make that yourself. It's not too hard to make. But yes, it's something I share with my dad, a taste for Limburger cheese. No one else in my family can even stand to look at it, let alone smell it. And it is a strong smelling cheese. And after you eat a Limburger, Bermuda onion and mustard sandwich on rye, let me just say that it typically stays with you a while,
yeah,
just like if you eat a lot of garlic or whatever.
You had a big day the next day, so I feel like this actually was a wise choice.
You think so?
I do.
Well,
I do.
I'm going to have to. Now, I'm going to be thinking about it all year, the Limburger sandwich.
But maybe somebody serves it around here.
I'm sure you can get
Keith.
One.
Oh no! Did we veer into a food podcast again?
We start talking about food again. But yeah, I'm gonna ask Keith how he feels about Limburger. But it is an acquired taste. Like I remember watching reruns of Our Gang, you know, Spanky, Alfalfa, and all of them. And Limburger cheese would like be a recurring minor character whenever, you know, they needed something that stunk really bad. You know, like I don't know why, but.
Imagine the person who had to sell it.
Right? No, but I mean, it's good. You should try at least once.
Next year. All right, I'll mark it down.
We're gonna have a Limburger cheese sandwich tasting next year for Oktoberfest. All right.
You know what? Next up, Blink.
Blink.
So that was like Oktoberfest, but Blink's right around the corner.
Blink's around the corner. There is a lot going on here.
No, the chamber's on fire this year.
All right. Well, with that, shall we wrap it up?
Definitely.
All right.